It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
There's not going to be any disbanding of our police. Our police have been letting us live in peace, and we want to make sure we don't have any bad actors in there. And sometimes you'll see some horrible things like we witnessed recently, but 99.9, but let's go with 99% of them are great, great people.
A president of the United States speaking out on defunding the police, which is like becoming epidemic, at least in a few places, in the blue places. Minneapolis wants to, they've already voted their city council to defund the police. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But right now, actually, I want to talk about the president because he has really been under siege. And I don't mean necessarily from the protesters, from everything, barraged. Interestingly enough, this morning, Fox, you've probably heard some of this because this is more of the same. Fox has a headline, poll puts Trump down 14 points to Biden in general election showdown. It makes much of that and the big headlines. And then you find out, guess who did the survey? Why, it's CNN. It's CNN who does the survey. And we're supposed to believe this. And we look at the end of it and it says that the CNN poll was conducted by between June 2nd to the 5th with 1,259 people nationwide questioned by live telephone. So that doesn't say they could be calling all of them, you know, one in New York. They could be doing half in New York City, half in L.A., and that'd be across the country. They could be polling people that are not paying any attention to what's actually happening. This is absolutely, completely invalid. So I'm just saying, but nevertheless, they use it to as another bludgeon to discourage people that support not just the president, but the things that he fights for, like police. You're crazy. You people are crazy. You see these polls, you are the crazy bunch because nobody believes the way you do. Everyone believes, you know, that Joe Biden is the champion. I don't believe that. I'm sorry. I just don't believe that. It comes out on the heels of a poll that I think it's by NBC, Wall Street Journal. Now, you say to yourself, Wall Street Journal, that's trustworthy. Well, maybe. Except the Wall Street Journal is filled with never-Trumpers also. And the political people in charge at Fox are very anti-Trump. So, listen, you can't trust these things. And I'm not saying that the president isn't in danger. I don't know. How would we know? I'm talking about in the polls. He is in danger every day. But I do not trust these polls. Just don't trust them. So that's the report from Fox. Poll pulls Trump down 14 points to Biden in general election showdown. Really? Okay. Maybe they polled all the viewers, and that's what they found. So yesterday, in fact, just this morning, the Trump reelection campaign is announcing they're going to start these rallies again. I have felt as though this last month, couple of months, one of the and I'm sure the left knew exactly this is one of the great benefits to them of shutting the country down is that the president has not been able to go out and have rallies and talk to the people that support him. And so in the absence of that, they've been able to rule the roost, as it were, in terms of media narrative, whether it was the president walking across Lafayette Park to hold a Bible up in front of St. John's Church after it had been vandalized and burned, attempt to burn it down. Yeah, that was somehow, you know, a political act, horrific. How could he dare do that? That's because, you know, he's been isolated from the people that support him and his policies, and we've been isolated from each other. And so I think this is going to change. They're calling it the Great American Comeback. And so look for it. We haven't announced any locations yet, but it'll be a chance for Americans who love this country and love our police and love law and order and don't like what's happening in the streets, not at all. Reject people of all colors who are lawless, whether they wear a uniform or they don't. believing that right is right and wrong is wrong. Pretty clear about that. There are a lot of us out there, and so it'll be a chance for us to gather together. And I want to just also say something. Oh, I should mention this. The New York Times published with great fanfare an article claiming that all these Republicans are going to vote against Trump. And one of the people they listed was former President George W. Bush. But now his spokesperson wrote a letter to the New York Times and said that's just false. The president hasn't said that. And that's a false thing that you reported. So just to go on record, George W. Bush has not gone on record saying that he will not vote for President Trump, or that he will indicate that he's voting for Biden. He hasn't done that. And can you imagine the New York Times printing something that isn't true? I just can't imagine. Well, of course, they printed something that was completely false by Senator Tom Cotton, and that's why their editorial page editor, who actually allowed the senator from the great state of Arkansas, Harvard grad, Iraqi war veteran, to print something about how he felt about what was happening in the streets and the potential need for American troops to go in. And the editorial page editor was fired. He had to quit his job because you cannot allow another opinion. You can't. You just can't allow another opinion. Just so you know, you can't do that, all of you, y'all, all of y'all. You can't do that. You only have to think this one thing, what the rioters and the protesters and the left and the media and Hollywood, what they say, what The View says, what they said. That's what you have to think. Don't forget. And I'm just telling you, don't do that. You hold to your guns. Do not give quarter. Don't compromise. Don't try to meet in the middle when it comes to truth. You can meet in the middle when it comes to things surrounding the truth, but not the truth. So anyway, I want to be practical here to tell you that we have a lot of elections coming up, and I have been very encouraged to see a lot of really fine candidates. And as I've said to you before, I am not capable of identifying all the candidates in all 50 states and talking about them here at this microphone. I can't do that, but you need to do some work online. Contact people you trust who are involved in politics in your state and find out who they are. I was just saying, you probably saw Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is running in the northwest part of Georgia. She was taken off of Facebook because she did an ad with her gun, saying that the protesters, that's too kind, the rioters, the looters, were going to be greeted, you know, in a very special way if they came to northwest Georgia. But she's running in the 14th district. She's supported by Jim Jordan, and then there's a couple of others that I saw on Fox, Catalina Lauf, Illinois 4th District, Daniel Merritt, Georgia's 1st District, Burton Brink of California Assembly District 49. Those are people that have been interviewed by Fox, who I was pretty impressed with the things that they said, and I will be bringing some of them to your attention as best I can. But please take responsibility now, because these primaries are coming up right now, I mean, even this month, and so please take your responsibility. I know you will. You guys are the best, the very, very best. Now, I want to give you a contrast here. You heard some of it at the top of the hour in our news broadcast, but think back, if you will, to the protesters in Michigan when the Michigan governor was shutting down everything and preventing them from doing business. I think she still is, but we don't hear about it much because we're kind of busy with what's happening on the streets. But you will recall that the media covered that, those protesters, those terrible, no good, awful protesters, breaking, you know, the distancing that we were supposed to be practicing. And then, so I want to hear you to hear this montage, and then it's going to sort of flip to something different, and that's how that very same media have been covering these rioters, looters, and some protesters in the streets of our cities, because it's a little different. Let's listen.
And a far more serious scene. Watch these images. Really just an ugly, a dangerous scene at the state capitol in Michigan.
As we look at this extreme group of people.
Those pictures and those clashes really show the chaos.
And you're out there with guns.
I don't want to call them rallies. They're not protests.
These quote unquote protests. I don't even think that that's the right word because protests are supposed to be peaceful.
I'm not embarrassed to say that I was afraid.
It's not clear what they're demanding to infect other people, demanding to make other people sick.
It's dangerous, and these people can take this home with them and hurt their families and all the rest.
I'd like to ask them if they're willing to sign away their right to treatment if and when they get infected.
I don't understand what is wrong with people. Stay at home.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is a
mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly.
That ain't a riot, what we're seeing right now in Minneapolis.
Excuse me, any reasonable person would say we shouldn't be destroying other people's property, but these are not reasonable times.
And please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
The beautiful thing is we're seeing citizens who are caring and concerned. They're hitting the streets.
Heartwarming to see so many people turn out peacefully.
You know, Brooke, I think this is a march, really.
But as they're coming off, it's peaceful. They're saying peaceful protest.
Across the country, it's bringing people together, community with unity.
People are risking COVID to explain to this country that we're fed up.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. So now, you know, the rioters on the street, they're risking COVID. They're brave. But those people in Michigan that wanted to go back to work and have their lives, they were stupid and dangerous and selfish. So it's a little obvious. We've got also Governor Tom Wolf of Pennsylvania, who's been one of the worst on the lockdown orders in Pennsylvania. In fact, he threatened business owners. He threatened them and county leaders that of a mutiny forming. He said to those politicians who decide to cave in on this coronavirus, they need to understand the consequences of their cowardly act, said Governor Tom Wolf, urging businesses to risk their lives and risk the lives of their customers or their employees by opening prematurely. We're engaging in behavior that's both selfish and unsafe. Problem is, Governor Tom Wolf just last Friday decided to go out and walk among those protesters in Harrisburg. He just walked right next to them. And so I like the way Daniel Horowitz puts it. He said the new Marxist frontiers, the riots cured the incurable virus. The riots cured them, cured that virus. Isn't that something? I guess we have something to be grateful for. And then we find out yesterday that the World Health Organization, the standard of all things, has told us now that asymptomatic spread appears to be rare. Oh, that means that if you're wearing that mask because you just might have it, you might be infected, you don't have any symptoms, or you're wearing it or you're afraid that people around you who aren't coughing, aren't sick, have nothing, are going to, you know, bring the death angel to you. The World Health Organization, the arbiter of all things, is saying, you know what, now we're finding out that's not true. If people aren't really sick, they don't really spread it. Isn't that something? So last night, Martha McCallum, Dr. Atlas, was on last night. I love him, and I want you to hear what he had to say. Clip 4.
I think the big question is really why these businesses and schools are closed to begin with. Really, that there is an obvious denial of the science and of the data. I mean, we know that the WHO yesterday said, quote, it's very rare, unquote, to have asymptomatic people transmit. We know there's really no risk to young people. 99.9% of deaths are to people under 24, which means the universities and the schools should open. There's this bizarre fixation on stopping cases when cases are being defined by a positive test. The only thing that matters are the cases that are serious, that require hospitalizations or death. And when you look all over the world, countries that have opened or partially opened, like Switzerland, the Netherlands, Denmark, Austria, they are not experiencing a higher number of hospitalizations or deaths. And this is weeks out already. They are accelerating their openings. And the same thing goes for the states here. When you look, as I did today, at Florida, Texas, Georgia, they may have more cases, but that doesn't matter if it's only people that are not going to have a significant problem with the infection. When we open up, we're going to have more infections if there's a contagious disease present. When we test more, we're going to have more cases. That's not the issue. The issue is to make sure we don't have the people who are going to get super sick or die get infected. That's the point. That's the denial of the science going on here with these closures.
All right, that's Dr. Atlas. And to add to that, we now know that the virus... Okay, so they shut schools, and yet the virus has killed 1/8 the number of children who die from the flu every season. But we don't close down schools for flu. We also know in Mississippi the governor is shaming people who want to shame people who wear masks, talking about how important it is and how it's still bad in Mississippi. But we learned that only 0.02% of Mississippians have died, and that half of those have taken place in nursing homes. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Every day, babies in their mothers' wombs are fighting for life.
with abortion being the leading cause of death.
I already had my mind made up. I was like, I'm going to go through with it.
The Ministry of Preborn has pregnancy centers nationwide, standing by to help young moms in crisis choose life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. By letting a mother see her baby in the womb and hear the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
I came seeking termination, but once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys.
Preborn's mission is to help save babies' lives and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Dr. Tamara Bonsanto, Assistant Secretary of Veterans Affairs for the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. She provides advisory support to VA leadership while facilitating accountability in the department. 2 Corinthians 8:21 reminds us of the importance of honor and integrity, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Dr. Bonsanto as she works to ensure transparency and accountability. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
A few days ago, I saw disturbing images from our nation's capital. Hundreds of white people on their knees, repenting for the color of their skin, pledging their allegiance to the Black Lives Matter movement. Kirsten Powers, a far-left writer for USA Today, called on white people to face up to our failure to eradicate white supremacy. The Southern Baptist Convention has even gone woke, embracing leftist concepts like systemic racism and critical race theory. Some schools are telling white children they have privilege. So look, here's the deal. If you attend a church that's preaching systemic racism, you need to find another church. If your child's school is teaching that white children are born with privilege, you need to find another school to educate your child. And you parents teaching your kids to repent for their whiteness, shame on you. That's nothing more than child abuse. We are all made in the image of God. Every single one of us, black, white, and brown, and God doesn't make mistakes. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We can't give up. The finest law enforcement anywhere in the world. There's nothing like it. But we won't be defunding our police. We won't be dismantling our police. We won't be disbanding our police. We won't be ending our police force in a city. I guess you might have some cities that want to try, but it's going to be very sad situation if they did, because people aren't going to be protected.
All right. The president, again, speaking about defunding police. And that brings me to what's happened in Minneapolis. By the way, a mural of a cop hanging from a noose was found in Houston. It's pretty disgusting looking, and it's specifically a Texas policeman with that big hat that all those Texas guys wear. And disgusting. The police are in great danger. And I will go on record if I need to repeat it. Now, probably I do, because every day different people are listening. Look, we are colorblind. We are against, as believers in Jesus, we are against any kind of injustice, because we believe in God's justice. It's not racial justice. It's justice to human beings. The sin is something that we all share. It's deep in our hearts, embedded in our nature, and turned over to our natural inclinations. It's wicked. We do horrible things to each other, and it happens in every race. And so no race is particularly righteous or particularly wicked. And so I just reject this discussion of black, white, as though there was some difference in us. We are, the Bible says quickly, easily, that the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Okay, based on that, I want to go ahead with this next part of the conversation, because the Minneapolis City Council has voted to defund the police force. 9 out of 13 of them have voted on that. And, of course, on the same day, St. Louis arrested that killer of the black retired police captain, David Dorn, who was guarding his friend's pawn shop in the midst of the riots. And this black man comes and shoots him in the back of the head and kills him. But, you know, that's not important for some reason. And so, but back to Minneapolis, they've decided to defund the police. And as a matter of fact, the city council president, Lisa Bender, was on with Allison Camerota of CNN. I want you to hear this interaction. Let's listen.
Do you understand that the word dismantle or police free also makes some people nervous? For instance, what if in the middle of the night my home is broken into? Who do I call?
Yes, I mean, I hear that loud and clear from a lot of my neighbors, and I know, and myself too, and I know that that comes from a place of privilege, because for those of us for whom the system is working, I think we need to step back and imagine what it would feel like to already live in that reality where calling the police may mean more harm is done.
Yeah. Okay. So what she's saying is, you know, you don't deserve to be protected. Because minority communities have not been protected. They're afraid of the police. So it's time for you to get yours. This is kind of like, and she's saying, as a white privileged person, she understands that she's going to be without police too, but it's as it should be, because we should have to share in the troubles. That's why they're burning down businesses. This is the Marxist thinking. All these businesses should go. You should suffer. You should be just as poor as the poorest in our country, and it serves you right. And it's the same theme of reparations, and it goes on and on and on. That's the Marxist view of where we are. And I'm going to get into that a little bit more here. Now, we've had this, you know, epidemic of kneeling. We've seen police kneeling. I saw a video of I don't know if it was a white or it was a black person standing over a white girl who was in her 20s. And she's all about being with him, protesting, and he's saying to her, well, if you are with us, then you've got to get on your knees and confess your white privilege. And she goes, I went. And so she gets down on her knees and she apologizes for her white privilege. And we're seeing this, you know, all over the country. So we saw it in the nation's capital yesterday. We saw, well, actually, a couple of days ago, we saw Democratic senators on their knees. It was Tim Kaine, Sherrod Brown, Michael Bennett, and a moment of silence. That's what they call it. And then, of course, we had the leaders of the Congress, Nancy Pelosi and others, on their knees in remembrance of George Floyd for the same amount of time that it took to kill him. And that's the way they are identifying with what's happened to George Floyd in the black community. But there are a lot of cautions here, and I want to bring one of them to you, if I might. This is an article by a guy named Jeff Nyquist. This is not going to be encouraging to you, but it is a warning to you. He says, to the Americans who are on their knees. And he goes back. I'm going to do his article a little bit backwards. He goes back to the French Revolution. And he says this: consider what happened in the French Revolution. King Louis the 16th, seeing an insurrection being prepared and wishing to spare the lives of his subjects, put himself into the hands of the revolutionaries, saying, gentlemen, I come here to avoid a great crime. I think I cannot be safer than with you. He abandoned his palace and gave up the protection of his Swiss guard. The revolutionaries, having the king in their custody, ordered the Swiss guard to lay down their weapons and surrender. We should think ourselves dishonored, replied the guard. We are Swiss, and the Swiss do not part with their arms, but with their lives. Heavy fighting began in and around the palace. The Swiss defended themselves. The revolutionaries were infuriated by the resistance. Louis the 16th heard of the fighting and ordered his guard to lay down their arms at once. They attempted to obey and were slaughtered. Of the 900 Swiss guards, 600 were immediately killed. Another 200 died of wounds or were murdered later on. Here's the summary. To avoid the bloodshed, the king gave himself up. His guard was slaughtered. The king was later beheaded by the revolutionaries who had previously promised his safety. His wife, the queen, was beheaded. His children were imprisoned. Thousands of innocent persons were beheaded in turn. The Paris mob dominated the politics of those years until a young artillery officer named Napoleon Bonaparte fired a gun, grape shot, point blank, into the Paris mob and dispersed it. No more mob. Guess who the country's next ruler was? So I want to go back now on Jeff Nyquist's earlier part of this piece. He says, "We are near the end of the Republic. A revolution has begun, and no decisive counter-revolutionary actions have been ordered. Why has this happened? Because we have been psychologically and linguistically disarmed. The oath of allegiance of federal officers is to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. But if we refuse to acknowledge the existence of enemies, and if we cannot name our enemies, no defense will be possible. And this is the one thing, above all, that has been forbidden. We are not allowed to name our enemies. This is the raw essence of linguistic and psychological disarmament. Add to this a process in which America's enemies have flooded into the government itself, and now, when mob violence has been deployed on a massive scale, the country finds itself unprepared, disoriented, and defenseless. How did we get here? Leftists have gradually taken control over the curriculum of our schools. This curriculum was copied from designs made in the USSR for our express use. This curriculum destroys the mind's ability to work competently with abstractions. It leads our children away from patriotism. It leads women to turn against men, blacks to turn against whites, and Americans to turn against their own country. It is a very simple process of indoctrination that nobody has seriously challenged. We have supported this treason ourselves with lucrative funding. In consequence, we have been gradually losing control of our own institutions decade after decade. And that is how we've come to this tragic moment in time." And then he goes on, "Around the country, police officers are kneeling before protesters, begging forgiveness. Whites in the suburbs are also kneeling before blacks, and appeasing an obsequious spirit has taken hold of a neutered middle class. It is a portent of impending mass expropriation. It is a portent of atrocities, killings, massacres, arbitrary arrests, rampaging mobs, foreign invasion, and military dictatorships." There's a lot more to say. Let me go to this other part of this. He talks about our generals. He talks about our police sworn to protect us with their lives, how they're holding fast, but the generals are not. And he talks about even the army generals have bent the knee. And he says, "The Chinese troops, when they arrive, will tell them to get off their knees. The Chinese will give them shovels and order them to dig. And when the holes are sufficiently deep, shots will ring out. Then body after body will fall into the holes. And the People's Liberation Army will, with soft dirt, cover the holes into which the corpses have dropped." And then he has some very harsh words for the American military leaders that we see, like the Secretary of Defense, who told the National Guard to stand down, told them to take away, he wanted them not to carry weapons, he told them to wear soft caps. He's the Secretary of Defense, for heaven's sake. And then we've got Mattis and the others doing everything, they not realizing, or refusing to acknowledge, as Nyquist is saying, who the enemy really is, and unwilling to fight. You know, when you think of those people kneeling, you think, you can't help but think of the images of people kneeling before ISIS, before their heads are cut off. Remember those guys on the beach in Egypt? Remember that scene, those guys in the orange jumpsuits who had to kneel to ISIS? And then their heads were chopped off. Do you remember that? And so I just think we are just kneeling too quickly. We don't kneel. We don't bow to people. That's something that we don't do in this country, except for one thing. And I want to play for you this next thing. This is a black Georgia state trooper. His name is Trooper O'Neill Sadler, and he had an interaction with a protester asking him to kneel, and this is what he said. Clip 7.
"I have any respect. I wasn't a trooper. I'm supposed to be out of town this weekend with my wife. I took off today, this weekend, but I'm out here to make sure y'all safe. But don't go there with respect, okay? I have much respect, but I only kneel for one person.
And that's God.
God, God, God.
Thank you, Pastor.
But what about, if you...
If I didn't have any respect, I wouldn't be here. I was supposed to be out of town this weekend with my wife. I took off today, this weekend. But I'm out here to make sure y'all are safe. Don't go there with respect, okay? I have much respect, but I only kneel for one person. And someone standing next to him said, "And that's God." And yes, he said, "God," as he walked away. That was the Trooper O'Neill Sadler. And I have to say, for those of you that are believers in Jesus, this is true. You can say, if someone demands that you kneel, you can say to them that you have respect for all life, regardless of color. You don't like to see anyone whose life is taken. It doesn't matter the color. It doesn't matter. I stand in solidarity with truth and with God himself, and I will not bow to you. I bow to God, but not to you. And so keep that in mind. I'm going to put this article by Jeff Nyquist on our Facebook page, because to the Americans who are on their knees, now he's not talking about this from a Christian perspective. He's not. He's talking about it from a historical perspective. Nevertheless, it's worth the read. To the Americans who are on their knees. So, all right, I want to talk to you about, remember the lady, the shop owner in New York who was so upset about her shop being burned? If you don't remember, let's listen again. It's clip 11. This is Lucy Hosley.
You said Black Lives Matter.
I said
I worked here part-time. Plus, I'm a part owner of this store. Look what
sister,
you did to my school.
Tell them, sister.
That's my, because I got they back. These are my things right here.
Look at the things you've done. You needed money. Get a job like I do. Stop stealing.
That's Lucy Hosley. We played it a couple of nights ago. I think New York. I think she was in Brooklyn. And so last night she was on a Fox. I think it was Martha McCallum. And I just want you to hear part of her story because I want you to hear it. This is clip 12. Let's listen.
I know what it's like not to have because I'm from the South. And I was raised in the cotton field from 4 years old as I can remember. Tell my mother died when I was 14 and I came to New York. It's heartbreaking when you don't have. It hurts. It really hurts. And I know what it's like to be told you ain't gonna be nobody, you ain't this, you ain't that. Because even my own mother said it to me. And when hard times hit, that's what I believed in. But thank God for faith. Thank God for my pastor. Working with me, you throw that away out of your mind. I want to tell the parents, stop telling your child there'll never be nothing. Because you open up a door that will ruin their mind. And by doing that, this is what will happen. They start looting, stealing, whatever they can do to make ends meet. We need to educate our community more. We need to tell them, look, we can do better than this if we come together. Stop telling your child they're stupid. They're not going to be nothing.
You know, I thought it was interesting. Lucy Hosley, she is that business, part business owner. And I believe it's at the Bronx. I'm not sure, but it's in one of the boroughs in New York City. And that just broke my heart. But you know what? That's a story. It isn't just the story of Black Americans. Her story is just, it's winsome, isn't it? She's doing her best. She's working so hard. The guy that she's in business with said she's been helping me long before she ever worked for me. She would come in and help me, and she would work so hard. And so I brought her, and she's been better to me than family has ever been. It was just an amazing exchange. And this is not about being Black and white. He was Muslim. This is about, well, whatever you call it. He was brown, you know. So, you know, this is the human spirit. This is the human spirit. This is what God calls out. You heard it talk about God. If it weren't for God, this is the greatness that God molds in our hearts, regardless of color, when we yield our lives to him. She is a really great woman. And she spoke to those kids, by the way, in that video. I don't know if she realized it, but it looked to me like mostly white kids with really nice backpacks tearing down her store. Not Black, poor inner city Blacks, which is what I think she thought. Just to go on record, that's who's tearing up the cities, at least in part. And there are a lot of Black mobs, too. So, yeah, they're both wicked. Both those white boys with their cute little backpacks and the Black guys from the hood. Yeah, working together to do wicked stuff. It's amazing. Racial reconciliation, I guess, right there, rioting together. I have this incredible piece written by a Black police officer that I want to share with you when we return. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the righteous
both of them alike are an abomination to the Lord. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. During the preliminary hearing in the Ahmaud Arbery case, Georgia Bureau of Investigation Special Agent Richard Dial revealed Travis McMichael used a racial slur after three blasts from his gun left Arbery dead in the streets of the Saltillo Shores neighborhood in February. Based on his review of the evidence, he testified Ahmaud Arbery was the only party who legally attempted self-defense. Special Agent Dial said Mr. Arbery's decision was to just try to get away, and when he felt like he could not escape, he chose to fight.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
I refer to your part-time jobs as what you do outside of your home, outside of your family, to generate an income for your family. Your full-time job is what you do within your family. We're on the go consistently, people are hustling, trying to get it. And I just want to remind everybody to whoa, pump the brakes. Make sure that we are not neglecting our families in the process.
Tune in to the Hamilton Quarter, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Show up at your full-time job, ready to work.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, and I want to encourage you to join us this weekend. We're going to be continuing our Encountering Jesus series. We're going to be looking at the life of Jesus as he ministered one-on-one to individuals. And this week, it's the woman at the well. We're going to see the power of Christ's forgiveness, his reconciliation, how he invites us to worship in spirit and in truth. You can listen on this station or connect with us at foiradio.org.
Proverbs says, "The heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps." Brian Fisher here with an excerpt from the Boy to Man book for fathers to read with their 12-year-old sons. The best answer to prayer I have gotten from God is no. He's the only one who sees the end from the beginning, and when his answer is no, either he is protecting me from something or saving me for something better. I've also learned that the worst things that have ever happened to me are the best things that have ever happened to me. God was using the heartache and anguish and disappointment of each painful thing to prepare me for an important and beneficial change in my life. He will do the same for you. Many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. Order a copy of the Boy to Man book today as a Father's Day gift at AFAstore.net, AFAstore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last Saturday, a courageous Catholic archbishop named Carlo Maria Vigano wrote an open letter to President Trump. It cast the present struggles in America's cities and suburbs as those between good and evil, or as he put it, quote, the children of light and the children of darkness, unquote. Archbishop Vigano observed, quote, it is quite clear that the use of street protests is instrumental to the purposes of those who would like to see someone elected in the upcoming presidential elections who embodies the goals of the deep state and who expresses those goals faithfully and with conviction. It will not be surprising if, in a few months, we learn once again that hidden behind these acts of vandalism and violence, there are those who hope to profit from the dissolution of the social order so as to build a world without freedom. Amen. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, in Chicago, they had their most violent day in 60 years. They had 18 murders in 24 hours. And meanwhile, in Brooklyn, there were 7 shots within 10 minutes in separate incidents. So this is the kind of crime we're seeing on our streets. This is what your policemen face, you know, in these big cities especially, every single day. And add to that, then, that they're becoming targeted by people, all kinds of people. And you know what? They're targeted by, shall I just say that again, all kinds of people, whether it's Islamists. By the way, the policeman who had his was stabbed in the neck last week in New York City. It turns out it's a Muslim. He's saying Allahu Akbar before he did that. So let's see. There's just equal opportunity killers of police right now. White angry people and black angry people and Islamists. Yeah, that's the kind of the way it's going on the street right now. And that's what makes this really interesting to me. This was a long, long piece written by a black police officer named Jay Stalian. He is a policeman in New York City. And I can't read all of it. I wish I could. In fact, we'll put it on our Facebook page. It's out of the Conservative Matrix. And the title is "This African American Police Officer Took Down Black Lives Matter with Some Brutal Honesty and Truth." But here's what he says. He says, "I used to be, I have to edit this, so forgive me if I stumble a little bit. I used to be so torn up inside growing up. Here I am, a young African-American born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, wanting to be a cop. I watched and lived through the crime that took place in the hood. My own black people killing others over nothing. Crackheads and heroin addicts lined the lobby of my building as I shuffled around them to make my way to our bedroom apartment with six of us living inside. I used to be woken up in the middle of the night by the sound of gunfire, only to look outside and see it was two African Americans shooting at each other. It never sat right with me. I wanted to help my community and stop watching the blood of African Americans spilled on the streets at the hand of a fellow black man. I became a cop because black lives in my community, along with all lives, mattered to me, and I wanted to help stop the bloodshed. As time went by in my law enforcement career, I quickly began to realize something. I remember the countless times I stood 2 inches from a young black man around my age, laying on his back, gasping for air as blood filled his lungs. I remember them bleeding profusely with the unforgettable smell of deoxygenated dark red blood in the air as it leaked from the bullet holes in his body onto the hot sidewalk on a summer day. I remember the countless family members who attacked me, spit on me, cursed me out as I put up crime scene tape to cordon off the crime scene, yelling and screaming out of pain and anger at the sight of their loved ones taking their last breath. I never took it personally. I knew they were hurting. I remember the countless times I had to order new uniforms because the ones I had on were bloody from the blood of another black victim of black-on-black crime. I remember the countless times I got back into my patrol car, distraught after having watched another black man die in front of me, having to start my preliminary report something like this: suspect, black, male, victim, black, male. I remember the countless times I canvassed the area afterwards and asked everyone, "Did you see who did it?" And the popular response from the very same family members was always, "Blank the police. I ain't no snitch. I'm going to take care of myself." This happened every single time, every single homicide, black on black, and then my realization became clearer. I woke up every morning, put my freshly pressed uniform on, shined my badge, functioned, checked my weapon, kissed my wife and kid, and waited for my wife to say the same thing she always does before I leave: "Make sure you come back home to us." I always replied, "I will," but the truth was, I was never sure. I almost lost my life on this job, and every call, every stop, every moment that I had this uniform on was another possibility for me to almost lose my life again. I was a target in the very community I swore to protect, the very community I wanted to help. As a matter of fact, they hated my very presence. They called me Uncle Tom and wannabe white boy, and I couldn't understand why. My own fellow black men and women attacking me, wishing for my death, wishing for the death of my family. I was so confused, so torn, I couldn't understand why my own black people would turn against me when every time they called, I was there. Every time someone died, I was there. Every time they were going through one of the worst moments in their lives, I was there. So why was I the enemy? I dove deep into that question. Why was I the enemy? Then my realization became clearer. I spoke to members of the community and listened to some of the complaints as to why they hated cops, and then I researched the facts. And this is what he can't, this is then when he gets to this counter. He said, "Complaint: police always targeting us. They always messing with the black man." Fact: a city where the majority of citizens are black, Baltimore, for example, will always have a higher rate of black people getting arrested. It will always have a higher rate of blacks getting stopped, and will always have a higher rate of blacks getting killed. The reason why is because a city with those characteristics will always have a higher rate of blacks committing blacks committing crime. And he goes on that it would be the same for Asians in China, Hispanics in Puerto Rico. It's called demographics. Second complaint: more black people get arrested than white boys. Fact: black people commit a grossly disproportionate amount of crime. Data from the FBI shows that nationwide blacks committed 5,173 homicides in 2014, but whites committed 4,367. He talks about Chicago's death toll being the equal of both wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he has more stats on that. Next complaint, blacks are the only ones getting killed by police, or they are killed more. Fact, as of July 2016, the breakdown of the number of U.S. citizens killed by police that year was 238 white people killed, 123 black people killed, 79 Hispanics, and 69 an unknown race. Fact, black people kill more blacks than police do, and there are only protest and outrage when a cop kills a black. There are only protest and outrage when a cop kills a black man. Then he goes, I'm not going to give more of those stats. I'm going to go to the next complaint. Well, we already doing a good job of killing ourselves. We don't need the police to do it. Besides, they should know better. The more I listen, the more I realize, the more I research, the more I realized. I would ask questions and would get emotional responses, inferences based on no facts at all. The more killing I saw, the more tragedy, the more savagery, the more violence, the more loss of life of black men at the hands of another black man, the more I realized. I haven't slept well in the past few nights. Heartbreak weighs me down, rage flows through my veins, and tears fills my eyes. I watched my fellow officers assassinated on live television, and the images of them lying on the ground are seared into my brain forever. I couldn't help but wonder if it had been me, a black man, a black cop on TV, assassinated, laying on the ground dead. Would my friends and family still think black lives mattered? Would my life have mattered? Would they make T-shirts in remembrance of me? Would they go on TV and press violence? Would they even make a Facebook post or share a post in reference to my death? All of my realizations came to this conclusion. Black lives do not matter to most black people. Only the lives that make the national news matter to them. Only the lives that are taken at the hands of cops or white people matter. The other thousands of lives lost, the other black souls that I, along with every cop, have seen taken at the hands of other blacks do not matter. Their deaths are unnoticed, accepted as the norm, and swept underneath the rug by the very people who claim and post Black Lives Matter. And he talks about the lack of understanding and education. They watch a couple of videos, and then they magically know in 2 minutes and 35 seconds how you're supposed to handle a violent encounter, which took you 6 months of academy training, 2 to 3 months of field training, and countless years of blood, sweat, tears, and broken bones experiencing violent encounters and fine-tuning your execution of the use of force continuum. I realize that there are even cops duly sworn law enforcement's aid officers who are supposed to be decent investigators who will publicly go in the media and call other white cops racist and KKK based on a video clip that they watched 1,000 miles away, which was filmed after the fact based on a case where the details aren't even known yet and the investigation hasn't even begun. Then he goes, I'm going to skip down. I realized that he's talking about the black community. They refuse to believe that most cops acknowledge that there are bad cops who should never have been given a badge and a gun, who are chicken blank and will shoot a cockroach if it crawls at them too fast, who never worked in the hood and may be intimidated, that most cops dread the thought of having to shoot someone and never see the turmoil and mental anguish that a cop goes through after having to kill someone to save his own life. Instead, they believe that all are bloodthirsty killers because the media says so, even though the numbers prove otherwise. Some of these people who say Black Lives Matter are full of hate and racism. Hate for cops because of the false narrative. Racism against white people for a tragedy that began hundreds of years ago when most of the white people today weren't even born yet. I realize that some in the African American community's idea of justice is the prosecution of any and every cop or white man that kills or is believed to have killed a black man, no matter what the circumstances are. I realize the African American community refuses to look within to solve its major issues and instead makes excuses and looks outside for solutions. I realize that a lot of people in the African-American community lead with hate instead of love. I realize that the very reasons I became a cop are the very reasons my own people hate me. And now in this toxic, hateful, racially charged political climate, I am now more likely to die. And it is still hard for me to understand to this day. There is a ton more to what he wrote, but I want to go back now that you've been listening, reading to me reading it. This was written by Officer Jay Stallion, S-T-A-L-I-E-N, posted as a message to his social media account. We will print this. It's in Conservative Matrix. And if that isn't like See, he has a sense of what's right and wrong regardless of color. And that's what I want to translate too. We want what's right regardless of color. We don't want people to be killed wantonly by anybody, any color, by any other color, killed. But we do want justice in the sense that criminals should be brought to justice. If there are real racists, they need to be brought to justice in both sides of the aisle and all colors. Listen, I can tell you a lot of other colors have a lot of prejudices. You do know that, right? And there's a lot of prejudice actually in the black community toward other blacks. So, you know, we are just, our minds, our hearts are set to hate and to hurt each other. That's the way we were born in sin, meaning we had a sinful nature. And only through the intervention of God and his son Jesus, who loved the world so much in spite of this, that he sent the only son he had as a sacrifice to die for all of those sins, your sins and my sins, the sins of our dark hearts. And that is the only answer to this. And that's why the other black officer is right. The only person he bows to is God, the only one. No Black Lives Matter protester, no movement on the street, no Islamists, nobody. You don't bow to anybody except God himself. That's the person to whom we kneel. And sometimes we kneel to him when that might cost us our lives. So just some great things to think about this morning. Now, I want to, if I can, quickly, Attorney General William Barr was on with Bret Baier last night, and they're revisiting, again, this whole notion that the president walked across Lafayette Plaza, that they mistreated the protesters to clear it out just for him to do a photo op at St. John's Church holding up his Bible. Well, Bret Baier brought it up, and this is what the Attorney General had to say. Clip 13.
A lot of talk about Monday, kind of reliving the moment there in Lafayette Park. If you had to do Monday over again, would you do something different?
Based on what I know now, no. On Monday, we were reacting to 3 days of extremely violent demonstrations right across from the White House. A lot of injuries to police officers, arson. Things were so bad that the Secret Service recommended the president go down to the bunker. We can't have that in our country. And so the decision was made. We had to move the perimeter one block. And that is what we were doing.
Did the president tell you that he was planning on walking over to the church?
No, he didn't tell me. I found out later that afternoon that he might go outside the White House. But as I've said, the decision to actually move out the perimeter was initially made Sunday night by the park police in the early morning hours. On Monday, when I arrived, I agreed with the general conception of moving out the perimeter so we could fortify, in the sense of a stronger fencing and so forth, Lafayette Park, and also give some breathing space. And that decision was set in execution at 2 o'clock with all the police tactical chiefs.
But, I mean, seeing what has come from it and the image that has at least been perceived, you wouldn't do it differently?
Well, the image has somewhat been created and miscreated in the sense that I haven't seen any videos on TV.
All right,
TV
so
of
I wish we could
violent.
Hear more of this. In fact, maybe tomorrow we'll come back to that. But basically, he says, no, the president had every right to do that. That didn't upset me. It was an image created by the press, a misperception. We cleared the park because they'd been violently protesting. Simple as that. All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.